Attention business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now at 800-221-9442 and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste a minute helping you with your tax problems. We'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. We've settled millions of dollars of tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking on your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-221-9442. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-221-9442. That's 800-221-9442. Again, 800-221-9442.
Hey everybody, this is Maggie, and my show, The Unsolicited Opinion, can be heard here on AM 1360 WNJC every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. You know, Barack Obama wants to redistribute the wealth. Well, I disagree. I think you need to earn what you get in life. So join me, because I'm going to be redistributing the truth one word at a time on The Unsolicited Opinion here on WNJC
1360. People who say that if you debate and you disagree with this administration, somehow you're not patriotic, and we should stand up and say we are Americans and we have a right to debate and disagree with any administration.
Hey everybody, this is Maggie, and welcome to The Unsolicited Opinion. How you doing tonight? Well, I'll tell you, I was just looking at something on the internet, and of course Obama, I guess he didn't want to take any questions from the press. That's not much of a shock, you know. I guess he popped his head into the briefing room today and they wanted to ask him questions, but he said, I'll take a couple tomorrow. Now, I kind of like that, don't you? I think I'll pay my bills tomorrow. I think, and since tomorrow never comes, I guess I wouldn't have to pay them, would I? So I suppose if we use that same logic with Obama, since tomorrow never comes, we're always living in today, aren't we? Well, he can just answer those questions tomorrow. It's like, I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. You know, I have another great guest lined up tonight, and actually she's been on here before, and I'm so thrilled that she's surviving the winter up in Alaska, because that's where this lady lives, but she's able to dig herself out long enough to be able to come on the line with us tonight. So in a couple of minutes, we will be going to a break, and I'll be bringing her on. But there's a couple other things I wanted to talk about quickly before we bring my guest, Nikki Rapana, on. And just a couple of things I was reading, and I thought they're kind of humorous. One of them is Attorney General Holder. Of course, you know, he's all up in arms because people are pretty upset that he hasn't bothered to apply the law equally. You know, that little ditty, equal justice under the law. You know, some of you listening, I'm sure you've heard that a time or two in your life. Of course, though, if you're young, you may not hear that in school anymore, because it's all this social justice mantra action that they have going on, you know, where some groups are more equal than others. You know, it's like Animal Farm, you know. Well, anyway, Attorney General Holder is upset because he feels that it's a slight against his people, that people in this country would happen to be upset that he's not applying equal justice under the law toward to the Black Panther case. It, of course, is so notorious. For anybody who's been paying attention, will remember the Black Panthers who were dressed in their Black Panther outfits with their clubs in hand in front of the polling place here in Philadelphia in the 2008 election. And Attorney General Holder didn't feel it was necessary to apply equal justice because some people are more equal than others. And now he's offended that his people, this is a slight on his people, that anybody is offended. Please, please. You know, I don't know, America, but sometimes you just can't take this stuff anymore, can you? Don't you get just a little bit tired of this whole hustle going on? I certainly know I get tired of it, And I know my guest who's going to be on shortly, I know she's tired of it, which is why she's living up in Alaska, and I think she might have the right idea. I don't know if there's enough room for all of us up in Alaska, so I don't know. But I don't know, we'll have to ask her. And then there's something else I wanted to talk about real quickly. Mr. Moore, you know who he is, Fat Moore. Well, Fat Moore, the creator of all those different documentaries, the blowhard, he thinks that wealthy people's money isn't theirs, it's ours, and that we should take it. So I think that Fat Moore, as I like to call him, I think that Fat Moore ought to give me some of his money, because then I'll buy more airtime and I'll use it to expose people such as himself who are absolutely total hypocrites. So listen, Fat Moore, if you want to take wealthy people's money, well, let's start with yours, because you've got a hell of a lot more money than most of the rest of us out here. So let's start with emptying your little piggy bank, Fat Moore, and donate a little money up to Nikki up in Alaska so she can continue her research, and donate a little money my way so I can buy more airtime so that I can expose hypocrites like you. I think that would be a wonderful idea, Fat Moore, so send the cash, okay? Go to my website, which is three words, Fat Moore. If somebody informs you out there that you were discussed tonight on The Unsolicited Opinion, I suggest, Fat Moore, that you send your check to me. You can find a donate button on my website, which is three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Now, listen, I always am in need of sponsors. I'm always in need of donors, because there's no free lunch in life, unlike Fat Moore, who seems to think there is. There is no free lunch in life, and everything comes with a price tag attached to it. And that means this airtime that you are hearing me on tonight came with a price tag attached to it. It's a brokered radio station, and that means that the people who are on it are paying to play. So if you like the fact that I like to redistribute the truth as opposed to redistributing the wealth, then why don't you go to my website, three words, The Unsolicited Opinion, and donate a few shekels my way, because I think if you want to be free in life, you're going to have to come up with a few coins to make that happen, because, again, there is no free lunch. Now, I could ramble on, but my guest is holding on the line, so what we're going to do is we are going to go to break, and then when we come back, Nikki Rapana will be joining us. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare with your children being raised by someone else? With our free information, you can lead a less stressful life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was about to be laid off from a company that was going bankrupt. On top of that, I wanted my kids to have mommy care, not daycare. My first month, I made $1,000 part-time. After 90 days, I was home with my children. And for the past 7 years, I've been here for my three little girls. I love this business.
Go to freedom225.com. Get out of the rat race and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I was skeptical. However, I had to get out of corporate America. Both me and my wife were able to quit our jobs and now make over $10,000 a month from home.
Go to freedom225.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 225.com. Freedom225.com. And start earning great money as soon as next week.
What would a $3,000 car repair bill do to your budget? It's easy to have repair bills for thousands of dollars. If your car is less than 10 years old and has less than 130,000 miles, Five Star Auto Protection can pay for the repairs that your auto insurance won't cover. Did you know that the average mechanic charges $120 per hour? Towing in a rental car will add at least $200 more to that bill. For less than $100 a month, for less than 1 hour of labor, our vehicle protection plan can cover all your major components, including computers and electronics, and also pay for towing, rental, and even roadside assistance for flats, lockouts, or when you run out of gas. If your manufacturer warranty is about to expire, or if you have no warranty coverage at all, give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help eliminate costly repair bills. Call us now. Call 888-449-7388. 888-449-7388. 888-449-7388. Plans not available in all states for all vehicles. See agreement for complete terms.
Took us by a hit the ground.
Hi, everybody. This is Maggie, and you are listening to The Unsolicited Opinion. And I wanted to tell you about a website that is a sponsor of my show that I mention every week that you need to go and look at their website. And this website is diggersrealm.com. They have been following and fighting illegal immigration for 9 years now. So if you want the real scoop, please check it out, diggersrealm.com. He is paying attention to what's happening, and he's another redistributor of the truth. So, hey, listen, I'm not into BS. I'm into the truth. Digger is as well, so check out diggersrealm.com. Now, you can always hear my show replayed daily at 4 o'clock Eastern Time on NetTalk World. You can listen to me on TalkStream Live. I'm on Sundays at noon on micro1650am.com, and I'm here on Fridays at 5 o'clock on WNJC. So, on that note, listen, my website, three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Send me an email. I need sponsors, I need advertisers, and I need donors. So any one of those three things you want to be, I'm all for it. Nikki Rapana is my guest tonight, and she has been on my show before, and her website is nikkirapana.blogspot.com. And I'm telling you, it's a wealth of information. You're going to be glad you went there and looked what this lady has been researching and writing about for about, I guess, 10 years now. Isn't that right, Nikki? Welcome to the show again.
Thank you, Maggie.
Has it been 10 years now?
Yeah, I started in 99. March 30th of 1999 was my first Agenda 21 meeting.
Oh, okay. So, wow, you got an anniversary coming up. We should bake you a cake or something, right?
I used to, like, when it was 2 years, you know, I was like, oh, my gosh, I've been working on this for 2 years. Now it's, you know, almost 12, I think. It just seems like my entire life is what it seems like.
Well.
But I did have a life before this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're having so much fun, right? Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, you know, in a way, I am. Because, you know, when you find out about the lie, totally the way that I did, in your face, can't get away from it, nobody believes you, and it's not why I came to Alaska, because I had come here in the 70s. I actually came up here selling magazines in 1974.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, when I was 17 years old. So I've been coming to Alaska my entire semi-adult life. I wouldn't call my... I don't think I became an adult till like 30, okay, when I had my first
child. You're not alone there. Nick, some of us are late bloomers, right?
Well, I worked in the bar business. I was in the entertainment industry. We partied. That's what I did. That's what I thought life was all about. On a real, you know, just, you know, I was supposed to find a husband, get married, have kids, and, you know, whatever. It was... I never really looked outside of that.
Right.
And when I did, it scared me so bad, I ran back into my little comfortable middle-class shell, you know? And sometimes I wonder, you know, who I would be if I had never gone to that stupid meeting where they called me a pig and trash and, you know? I mean, they were so confrontational with their language that someone like me, I needed to know where they got that from.
Right.
And
right.
How dare you think that you can do that in a public meeting? I don't even know you people. I've been cleaning my house since I moved in.
Right, right.
You know, so it doesn't necessarily apply to you. It's like you get labeled. And the whole thing is about labeling. You know, this is my biggest problem with explaining communitarianism. Because that's not a label you're supposed to understand.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you, this morning my girlfriend and I went to the county commissioner's meeting here in the county we live in outside of Philadelphia. And there were some fireworks that went on today because, we were talking about their sustainable development plan, and then we were talking about ICLEI, and, of course, they denied that they knew anything about ICLEI when, of course, the people in the room that we knew about ICLEI were right there, and my friend and I have no problem with pointing those facts out to them. You know, facts are a terrible thing. You know, it's hard to get around facts. And so there were some fireworks and, you know, don't talk anymore and that kind of stuff, but that doesn't work very well for me. You can't tell me I can't do something when I have a right to be able to do that. So anyway.
Well, citizen participation to a communitarian means citizens who agree with us can participate. All others stop at the door.
Exactly.
And when you find that out, that, you know, the rule by council and committee, that's how it's set up. It's, you know, the Soviet Chinese model, you know, where they've perfected it is, you know, they have an agenda, They're going to pass that agenda. Whatever policy, program, law, resolution, code, whatever they're suggesting at that meeting will be passed. And yes, they will take public testimony, and you get to stand up and sound like an idiot because you don't know what's going on, you know? So most of my early speak out, you know, when I have my 3 minutes, I sounded like a nutcase. I know I did, because I didn't know what they were doing. And most of the time I was just saying, what's going on?
Right, right. No, of course
and
they
how dare you?
Yeah, exactly. But that, you know, that just gets the my dander up a little when people try to tell me to shut up. It doesn't work very well. It never did, I guess. And I say this, and I may have said this to you in the past, Nikki, but I knew in kindergarten I wouldn't make a good slave. So, you know, I mean, all my life I've known that. Now, it could be just the Irish in me that I have a real problem with people trying to tell me what to do in life. I don't know. Maybe it's that. Who knows? But it doesn't work real well. It's not a good situation to witness because I do get my dander up a little bit. But be that as it may, let's talk about communitarianism, Nikki, because you've talked with me about that before, and you've said mentioned different times in emails that we've sent back and forth, you know, that people aren't talking about it. So let's talk about it tonight. What is it?
Well, what it is, I don't know, it seems like most people right now, I'm going to try and grab on where people already understand it, okay? Everyone calls Obama a socialist, and they call his policies socialist policies. So they understand a piece of the dialectic.
Okay.
Okay. Socialism is one of the evolutionary stages set up by Marx. It's called dialectical materialism, and it was one of those terms that I didn't know what it meant, and I didn't really care, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to relearn a lot. I understood communism. I understood what I thought was Marxism. But I only understood the piece of Marxism that they taught me. And what we never look at is that the entire premise is that people from different economic class station, okay?
Okay.
The poor needed to fight the rich. And, of course, in Marxist theory, you had to get rid of the middle class because they were just in the way. You know, you needed only two classes. The final struggle of mankind, of human history, was going to be between the poor, the proletariat,
okay,
and the elite rich. So what they've been doing is dividing and conquering every group that they could possibly create and establish. And the left-free right is the most obvious of all of them. And so what you have is you have a common enemy, and the common enemy is communitarianism. It's the final synthesis in the right v. left dialectic. It's the solution to all of the conflicts that are going on in the world. It's a solution to all the religious conflicts, all the political conflicts, and terrorism, everything. I mean, it fixes everything. It's the final solution, and it's so perfect that it gives rise to no opposition.
So who came up with this communitarianism idea? Is this where Emma Tayezioni that you write so much about, is that who came up with this whole idea of communitarianism?
No, he was taught. He was taught by Martin Buber, and Hegel is one of the main writers who set up he established the theology behind it.
Okay.
He was a theologian first, and then he became a philosopher. And so at the time of the American Revolution, this is just my thesis, you know, and I have a lot of evidence, I think, that backs up my thesis, but
okay. Every
thesis has its flaws, okay? So I'm not saying that mine is perfect, but I followed it back as far as I could, and it originated in the Talmud 2000 B.C.
Okay.
So all of your Judaic tradition, your legal tradition, your Talmudic law is dialectical.
Well, you know, Nikki, one of the other people that I've had on my show, Dean Gotcher, and he talks about Hegel's dialectic really originating as going back as far as you were talking about, but he talks about them in Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. That was like an original concept of Hegelian dialectic was, you know, then this whole thing with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And
I use good v. evil as one of the, you know, as a
what do you call it, you know, as a sample to
okay.
show people that it can be simplified and that it's all about the argument. If there is no argument, then the next phase cannot develop because the next phase is always a solution to the argument.
Okay. So they have to create the arguments to be able to push the agenda further and further and further.
Yes. And so the way out, people ask me all the time, how do we get out of this? I go, you got to stop arguing inside the dialectic and start arguing against the solution. And
okay.
the solution, you and I both know, is a document called UN Local Agenda 21.
Okay.
It's all there. All of the religion, all of the changes to your bureaucratic structure, and yes, they're only suggestions. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they're all being taken verbatim. And laws in the United States of America are being passed that come up right out of that document.
Oh, yeah,
and
no doubt about it. Let me ask you a question, Nikki. How would this... Now, communism is, it's, you know, just blunt and in your face, but how does this differ from communism, or this is the road to communism, essentially?
No, communism is a stage. Marx and Engels never identified the final stage. The final stage, in my theoretical opinion,
okay.
is communitarianism. Because that's the law that's being introduced in the European Union since 1957. That's the Bolivian Constitution, openly is declared as a communitarian constitution. All your NAFTA, CAFTA, and Jean Monnet School and the Robert Schuman School of International Law is about communitarian law. It's called community law. And it rules at every level of government. It's the international law is global community law. EU law is regional community law. And then you have local community law. And you have community development associations that are implementing programs that enforce community law. Community policing is the enforcement agency that sits on all the Agenda 21 planning meetings and okay. suggests new ways of enforcement. They call it innovative strategies of enforcement right in the plans.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, this, you know, I was actually looking at something that you had written, and this is back in 05, what the communitarian stand for. I had I found that on the website, and I was looking at some of the things out of that today, and you identify in that, let me ask you a question. Is communitarianism, then, is that the third way?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So in this thing, in this article that I read that you had written today, Nikki, you were talking about six waves of communitarianism, spiritual authoritarianism, anarchist, I didn't write every word down, socialist, Hutterite, Mennonite, single tax colonies, and you went through different periods of in this phase of communitarianism.
Right. When they invented the first Marxist dialectic, okay?
Okay.
Because Hegel's in 1812 was not the same as the one that Marx and Engels grabbed onto. Actually, it was the London Communist League wrote it. They're behind all of this.
Okay.
And that's direct. You can go right and find that out. You know, the London, all roads lead to London in my book, okay?
Yeah, well, a lot of other
and
people
now,
feel that same
you know,
way too, Nikki.
China, with this whole big move that they're bringing China in now, you know, it's a whole other piece of the dialectic because they have perfected communitarianism and they call themselves not communists anymore, but communitarian.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and all the communitarian case law that I was finding at the local level, usually, in fact, it had to do with torturing suspects and whether that could be used as evidence in court.
Interesting.
I'm not kidding,
was their,
you know?
What was their synthesis of that?
Well, now they can torture you, but they can't use it in court. That's communitarianism. It's a balance between individual liberty and full slavery.
Yeah.
Now, can there be a balance between those two ideas?
I don't think so.
Freedom versus slavery equals communitarianism. All of your, it's the most opposing ideas that have ever existed in man. God is all-powerful in my life and directs every move I make versus there is no God and I could care less. What's the perfect middle between those? because it's called the ultimate third way, the final solution. Now, there are people that have said that it even goes farther than that, but as far as I've taken it,
okay,
is to the final solution that I see implementing right now is communitarianism. So if you look at the Marxist dialectic, now Hegel's was an idealistic thing, and he said the idea comes first and then history follows, and Marx turned that on his head or whatever and said that the history comes first and the idea follows, or I could be backwards there too.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, okay? But anyway, they both had, one was, Hegel was dialectical idealism, and Marx was dialectical materialism. And that's the whole theory of the conflict between these two classes, only two in the end, okay, the proletariat and the elite. So
well,
as long as you have a middle class in America, it's not working as well here. So that's why I think right now the big push between the unions and the Tea Party. They need that conflict. They need Americans to fight each other so that we won't look at what's happening right down the street in City Hall under these plans. Because
exactly.
These plans are stealing our liberty.
Exactly. Well, that's one of the things that I was reading that you had written in this article that you read today, was that there must be constant conflict and confusion to create a new, constantly evolving global government system. And that's a perfect example, the unions against the rest of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Tea Party group.
And our country was formed as a union of states against the empire, against free forced trade. Now, we all think that unions started with, you know, Marxism, because they took it over. But it was about a protected economy and about buying from equals, not depending on slave labor. America has no clue. I didn't really understand what we were founded in, and we certainly were not founded in exporting our essential items from countries that we already know use slave labor. I mean, China's been communist since the 50s, since I was born.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So
did you ever
think that those people had, you know, good wages and freedom of choice? No, we know they don't. But we'll still buy everything they make.
Exactly. Well, there's certainly no morality associated with communitarianism, is there?
No. No, there really isn't. And so, but it doesn't make me, because I'm anti-communitarian, it doesn't mean I'm saying I'm more moral.
Oh, I realize that. I understand that.
Accused of not being a perfect person, and I've told half my life story already online, because I am not a perfect person. It has nothing to do with me in particular. I always wanted people to just look at my argument, because it's scientific. I followed the scientific formula. I wrote my part two of my thesis to American Sociological Association standards. I did not have a mentor. I did not have a college. I had to write the program, because there isn't one anywhere in the world. Nobody is studying the communitarian synthesis. We are all still fighting inside the right v. left thing. It's communism versus capitalism, and that's all over. It's been over for a really long time. I thought, sure, that all I had to do was tell people, and they'd go look at it and go, oh, good. And then I would be, like, millions of people would be standing next to me, not behind me, but next to me, okay?
You know,
I can count the people that understand my work on one hand, practically.
Well, Nikki, it's very hard to pull yourself out of that whole argument. It's very difficult to watch what's happening and not comment on it and not get tangled up in it. It's like trying to run through glue. It's, you get stuck in it, and it's so hard to extricate yourself. And that, I think, is what makes it so difficult for people to pull back out of all of this stuff that goes on and to just focus on fighting against Agenda 21. It's real easy to get tangled up in the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, it's not like I'm mad at anybody anymore. I was for a while. You know?
Yeah, well,
I've gone through
understand.
My stages, you know, after, like, all these years. You know, it's been over a decade. And I in the beginning, oh, I was spitfire. I wasn't leaving those meetings. I signed up for every committee. Every time they said, we need volunteers for the closeout committee on the HUD raids we did and on Aurora Avenue, I said, I'll be on that committee.
Yeah, yeah.
They just started laughing
at me. Oh, not her
okay.
again.
Yeah, oh, no. And then in in late 99, they passed a new policy that my friend at the time, Abby Frankenfield, called the No More Nikki Rapana policy.
Really?
Because, yeah, they, what they did was right, that it was inappropriate for citizens to go to citizen meetings because of the citizens that were being discussed at the meetings, and it was a violation of their privacy.
Isn't that interesting?
They actually said that. Yeah, they actually said that. And then the lady who wrote it, Veronica Jackson, she was the director of the Department of Neighborhoods. They just hired her and threw her in the middle of this mess. And there was me, you know. And she's the one that led me to Etzioni by quoting him directly. She never gave me his name, right?
She just told
but
you
she kept
what
telling
was.
Me that the rights of individuals sometimes need to be sacrificed for the good of the community.
Right.
And I said, oh, no, they don't.
Yeah, that flies totally in the
oh,
face
no.
of the Declaration of Independence, doesn't it?
Right. And I went, where did you get that? And she's like, well, everyone knows that now. And then I said, she told me that there was a debate. And I said, well, I need to be in on that debate because I don't know if anybody's on my side in that
yeah.
debate. You know, what are you guys debating each other over? My rights? Forget it. I'm there.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, Nikki, hang on that note, let's take a break real quick and then we'll be right back. Listen, everybody, you're listening to Maggie. This is the Unsolicited Opinion Radio Show. My guest tonight is Nikki Rapana. And hang on, we'll be right back in about a minute and a half.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare with your children being raised by someone else? With our free information, you can lead a less stressful life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was about to be laid off from a company that was going bankrupt. On top of that, I wanted my kids to have mommy care, not daycare. My first month, I made $1,000 part-time. After 90 days, I was home with my children. And for the past 7 years, I've been here for my three little girls. I love this business.
Go to freedom225.com. Get out of the rat race and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I was skeptical. However, I had to get out of corporate America. Both me and my wife were able to quit our jobs and now make over $10,000 a month from home.
Go to freedom225.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 225.com. Freedom225.com. And start earning great money as soon as next week.
What would a $3,000 car repair bill do to your budget? A vehicle protection plan from Five Star Auto Protection can save you thousands in repairs. Your auto insurance won't cover a $3,000 transmission repair, but we will. If your car has less than 130,000 miles, give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help eliminate costly car repair bills. Call us now. Call 888-449-7388. 888-449-7388. 888-449-7388. Plans not available in all states for all vehicles. See agreement for complete terms.
Everybody, this is Maggie, and you're listening to the Unsolicited Opinion Radio Show. And if you want to send an email my way, if you have some commentary, if you'd like to give your unsolicited opinion, feel free to do so, because I'm all about liberty and free speech. So you can send an email to me, go to my website, which is three words, theunsolicitedopinion.com. Send me an email, advertise on my show, become a sponsor of my show, donate a few shekels so that the show stays on the air. Whichever three, any of the three you'd like to do, or you can do all three, it's okay with me. But anyway, that's the way to contact me. So, hey, I suggest that you do. And we are joined tonight, or I should say I am. I always talk in the plural, and I don't know why that is. But anyway, Nikki, I'm so glad you're on here with me tonight.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. So
I like talking to you.
How do we argue against this? Stop arguing against all this other stuff. Stop fighting the left v. right, that whole dialectic, and just fight against what their solution is, what their final solution is. And isn't it so interesting that the final solution really is no different than what Hitler's final solution was to solve all his problems? So this communitarian's final solution to solve all the problems is their United Nations Agenda 21?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities with every totalitarian dictator that as far back as it goes, you know. I just watched a thing on the Spartan history the other day, and I was like, oh, I can see that happening for 400 years, you know.
Oh, sure.
And taking and manipulating people, it all stems from a belief in that there's a certain class of people that are born to rule. And once I grasped that, that they thought our American documents about individual liberty, you know, were so outside the realm of reality, you know, it's why they were able to deny the same rights to all the people that were in the Americas. Because the original system, our system, didn't include any of the further momentum that we were making, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's like trying to understand why all men weren't created equal under those documents and that slavery was still legal. You have to understand state rights. You have to understand the world at that time, you know?
Right.
And so many of those issues that pertain to how we became communitarians today, you know, the farther back you go, it depends on who you read. So you have to read hundreds of books by many different authors to even start gleaning your own opinion and understanding of American history. So, you know, and it's hard for someone when you're not in college, like I wasn't at the time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I was able to do the amount of research that I did was because of the Internet, that I could go to thomas.gov and start pulling up all the legislation, because that was my background, okay, was mainly program and policy research.
Okay.
So when that's what I want to see is the law. I want to see the program. When I got our neighborhood plan, 80-some pages, I read it. And then I found out I was the only one besides Abby that did.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the council members that adopted it and approved them never read the plan. I couldn't believe that.
You know, it's so evident that that's what's occurring, and I said that today, you know, that Lennon had talked about the useful idiots, and I said in that county commissioners meeting today that I'm sure a lot of the people who are jumping on board this whole hustle are just what Lennon would describe as the useful idiots who are just helping push this agenda so that we can all be slaves again.
Yeah, and it anything that sounds good, you know, I don't know, one of my first jobs was as a mag salesman, okay?
Okay.
And we told people that I was in a student nurses contest, and that when they, I never said buy, when they voted for me by purchasing magazines,
okay?
Then I was winning a scholarship to be a nurse.
There you go.
Okay? That's how you sell magazines door to door. I mean, our variation thereof.
I remember,
you know?
That. God, I remember that.
It's a big old scam. And then the people who sell the magazines, they never get paid either, see?
Yeah,
it's
well,
it's a real good scam, you know? You get other people to go out and tell people this ridiculous story, and, you know, it's the power of persuasion. So when I was younger, you know, I was good at it. Some days they called me a hot shot, hot one day, shot the next, because I could get out there and do it for one day, and then the next day I'd feel really bad, you know? So I had my conscience, even at 17 years old, was that, you know, everybody I meet thinks I'm somebody else. I didn't like that.
Right.
Personally. And it was a really hard choice. I quit that job in 75 when there were no jobs. And I was in Washington, Renton, Washington. Boeing laid off 36,000 people. There wasn't a job in, you know, the Pacific Northwest, I don't think, you know.
Right,
so I ended up going back to Alaska as a go-go dancer, okay?
Okay.
That's the bottom line of my life. I've been poor since I started. So, and I've also had money. I married well. So, you know, it's not like I've always been poor. But the idea that I have spent 10 years defending everyone else in this country's right to have and keep their property is confusing to the people who see how I live.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because they're driven by something entirely different than what drives you. But if we get lucky, Nikki, maybe Fat Moore Michael Moore will decide to give us some of his
That's
millions.
So funny. You're hilarious. You know, I see him as the dialectical opposite of Alex Jones.
Okay, there you go. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure where David Icke fits in with the whole alien illusion thing, but I know that, you know, so many people want to follow a loudmouth fat man. It's just a popular thing in our culture. Maybe it's the football thing. Maybe they look like they played football in college or something. You know, hoorah, rah. I don't know.
Well, I don't. I think a lot of times people get starstruck, and so that eliminates their common sense or their better judgment when they follow people like Fatmore.
Well, they give out a certain degree of good information. Actually, sometimes I wonder if they don't have a direct line to the globalist cartel that feeds them certain information, so that they can break the story first, and then people can say, well, you know, they've been talking about that for years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what happens to me a lot, is the reason I'm alone in my work, the ACL, doesn't have, you know, any funding, any anything anymore, you know, is because I cannot, you know, because of what I know and understand, join any group that's part of the dialectic.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult. Well, it would be impossible to do that, because you have to stand on principle, Nikki, and that's where you're at in life. And so, how could you can't be part of something you're railing against?
Well, sometimes I think that, you know, the best way to, because it is happening and it's not being stopped. The small outcry against Agenda 21 is being diverted by the right very successfully, from what I can see. There's very few people on the Democratic side, besides, you know, Rosa,
mm-hmm.
that understands that this has nothing to do with party politics.
Well, that's what I try to tell people, and there's been a journalist who had done a very good job, actually, of writing about sustainable development, UN Agenda 21, and he did it in three parts. But one of the things that I noticed right away was he was focusing that it was the left behind this, and I actually called him and I said, you know, it isn't. I said, it is both sides, and it isn't one over the other. They're both involved with pushing this agenda. I said, and that's the most difficult thing for people to recognize, that it isn't the Democrats versus the Republicans. They're both selling us all down the river.
Right, and I'm sure the guy didn't call it communitarianism.
No, he didn't call it communitarianism.
No,
but honestly,
if you leave that word out, then you can keep it in the divide. If you understand what communitarianism is, then you're not in that divide anymore. You've at least, you know, taken it to the next evolutionary stage of understanding, and that's how they understand it. And I think that's why all those major right players and the left need it. Both, you know. There's some really good writers on the left, too, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Telling
well, there's a lot of very good writers out there, exactly.
Right. Then they're all just, you know, pouring it down, feeding the conflict, though. Everything they write at the end is always something to do with feeding the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't use the word communitarianism, and I wasted probably 4 years writing them all.
Did you really?
Why?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I tried to engage them all the time, and they'd come right back and try and suck me into the dialectic every time if they did respond, you know?
Yeah.
So mainly what, you know, what I had to do is just, like, stay in my own, you know. Well, I would go back and read my thesis is what I would do.
Well, you know what, honestly, Nikki, I try to tell people when I explain to them about sustainable development, I say, listen, you know, Bush was down, and Bush Sr. was down in Rio in 92, and Clinton had the President's Council on Sustainable Development. I said, they're both involved. See, it doesn't matter who it is. You know, and I think that helps a lot, but it is very easy because we've been so trained so well to fall into that whole left-right dialectic. It's very hard to get out of it, and it's hard to see past it.
Right, and I don't have the tools, obviously, to help people see past it unless they already have an inkling. Most, I'd say 90% of the emails that I get from people, and I have got hundreds over the years,
okay.
that wrote and said, thank you so much, because this always bothered me. You know, no matter what direction they went, they could see that it was heading in the same direction. And once you get to the point and you say, it doesn't matter what side you're on, the solution is going to be the same.
Exactly.
It's already been written. Like, people understood when the Patriot Act was passed so quickly and nobody read it, you know, that it had already been written prior to 9/11. And that fact alone, I thought, was going to be a big one for people. They'd say, wow, you know, they wanted that. They wanted the right to, you know, snoop.
Yeah, like they're doing right today.
Mm-hmm. And well, what do they want to know?
Well, you know what, honestly, though, Nikki, you know, my own family, it's very hard. Well, none of them pay any attention to anything I have to say. I mean, only if they're sitting across the dinner table from me will they listen, and that usually goes in one ear and out the other. You know, so with some people, you don't even, it's like, it's a pointless endeavor, actually, but you got to keep trying, which is what you've been doing for the last 11 years or 12 years.
Well, sometimes I stop and just focus on learning survival skills, physical survival skills. I've learned to use a chainsaw, you know.
Yeah.
I can camp in Alaska in 50 below.
No, you got to have some way of learning. You need to know how to take care of yourself. Nikki, I give you a lot of credit. You got more spine than I would have to be able to do that.
Well, once I saw that everything was going to go, one of my dad's favorite sayings, to hell in a handbasket.
Right.
I really don't know what that means. But when I saw that, when that became very clear, after we lost the lawsuit, I brought a lawsuit. I got 9 clients, and we found an attorney to sue the city of Seattle. It's called Dawson v. the city of Seattle and King County.
Okay.
Because there was county agents and city agents involved in the invasion of privacy.
Okay.
And it was beyond an invasion of privacy. They were actually gathering data about the people in the houses.
Is this the asset-based community development? Or
yes.
The community mapping?
Yes.
Okay.
And it, actually, what it was part of Weed and Seed.
Okay. I've heard that around here.
Weed and Seed morphed into community-oriented policing, and they have a little program where they follow the same thing. I just looked this up a few months ago. They're still doing it. It's called SARA, Scanning Analysis Response Assessment.
Okay.
And the scanning phase is where they identify everybody in the neighborhood and as much information as they can get on them. Well, now, you know, 10 years later, holy cow, where the information that they have. Now they want our DNA straight up.
I know. It's incredible, and I don't understand why the American people are not just flipping out over all these
things.
Well,
I don't think they understand what the plan for that information is to control where you live, where you work, how many children you're allowed to have, because, you know, it's eugenics, too.
Sure. Oh, sure.
They don't want anybody stupid or retarded or on drugs or criminal background to have children, period.
No.
You know, I mean, of all the people say population reduction, they're already writing about the types of people that they need to, you know, and they've been sterilizing people in this country for 100 years or whatever, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's actually very true.
It goes way back, you know, the whole push for, you know, abortion, free abortion, which I was part of that because that was my era, you know.
Sure, but I mean Planned Parenthood, the woman who founded Planned Parenthood.
Yeah,
she was all into
and I
eugenics.
Still have lots of people that quote Margaret Mead to me. You know, they quote Thomas Jefferson to me. They quote, you know, Albert Einstein to me. I'm like, okay, you know, that we don't understand the role those people played in promoting the dialectic. Because that's all I followed. When I was studying this, I looked for people who pushed the agenda forward.
Okay.
And that's most everyone that I ever read in history. And that's really hard to take, even harder than the left-right divide, to find out that most of your favorite authors, favorite people who, you know, might have taught you your spiritual beliefs, you know,
are all involved in this.
All
yeah,
involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it is. Well, you know, I think honestly, the whole foundation for this, Nikki, is evil. I truly do. I think it is absolutely evil in its entirety. And so,
right. But if you say that too much, okay, then they have a camp they can put you in. You know, it's like if you say it's the Jews, then you're anti-Semitic, and they have you boom. Pegged, right? Or if you say it's the Masons, then you're, you know, another peg. You believe in the Illuminati. Or if you say, oh, I think it's the aliens or the Nephilim, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. But you know what? Here's one thing with that I think has worked to our advantage, Nikki, is the fact that they throw around the race card and put labels on people all the time now. When they do it so much, it's like crying wolf, that it doesn't have the impact that it did before. That the American people are throwing those labels off, and they're not being bothered by them anymore, and that those labels aren't preventing them from moving forward. So, yeah, they do label everybody, but it's not working.
like it used to work.
Well, that's good news, Maggie, because I'm not outside. You know?
Yeah, no, I know you're not.
I haven't seen that, but you know that's really good news because it is a word game. We had a board game for a while called War on Words. That's where our dialectical thesis came from, is I was trying to explain how to play the game and how you were trapped. And I had people on the game starting in the middle as a communitarian. And then you have to answer questions, and they're all legal questions. And some take you back towards freedom, and some take you back towards more slavery, you know, because not everybody's a slave in a communitarian society. Only the people who deserve to be slaves are slaves.
Only the people who deserve to be slaves are slaves, huh? Well, isn't it everybody that the elitists deem are a slave?
Anybody who doesn't know how to write a grant and live on free money is a slave.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Who knew? I have to tell you honestly, the more I learn, the more it just blows my mind, because I really never realized until recently the hustle that these tax-exempt foundations were, and that all these different grants that people apply for and all these different organizations, and I had no idea how many people were living off, sucking like leeches off the rest of the working populace. I really didn't realize the extent of the fraud and corruption.
Well, and all of the grants that I was following in 99 came in through community-oriented policing grants. They were from the Federal Department of Justice. And when I asked to review, okay, because you have to ask to review the documents and then you can ask to copy them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So in the process of filing my public disclosure request, you know, I asked for the grant that had funded the SWAT raid in my neighborhood searching for bugs and rats. Suspicion of harboring bugs and rats, specifically.
Suspicion of harboring bugs and rats?
Yeah, suspicion of harboring bugs and rats.
How do you harbor a bug?
So you get a junkie to write a big long thing that says he identified 100 different German kind of bugs or something. It was the most hilarious affidavit I've read in all of the stuff I've read. But they used that. And they called it a legal warrant, you know. But it was signed by a municipal court judge, which later on I found that that's not a legal warrant. Warrants, you know, search warrants got to be at the superior court level, right?
Okay.
So this was community development, see, trying innovative ways of getting inside people's houses, and that
sure.
was one of them. And so when they came back and said that there was numerous grants had been used, and that I needed to be specific on which one. Okay?
Okay.
So I wrote back to the community-oriented... Actually, I was doing this with Seattle Police Department, because community-oriented policing services at the local Seattle level and the D.C. level never once responded to any of my complaints or requests for documents. I like that on the record. Those people don't talk to you. They won't answer questions. So I was having to fight with the little guys, you know, mostly
mm-hmm.
all attorneys for the police department, for the Department of Neighborhoods, and I got to know a lot of lawyers in Seattle.
Yeah, I imagine you did.
Yeah, and so when they came back and said, you know, which grant, well, then I went and found the name of one, and I sent them that request for that specific grant, which was called Troops More, where they paid any city who hired a new community cop with 2 years prior military service, preferably as a sharpshooter
okay.
or marksman, they got a $5,000 bonus. The city did, not the cop.
Okay.
So that's where all these new cops act like they're in the Army, because I'm an Army brat. My dad retired sergeant major. I know military when
okay.
I'm around it, whether they're wearing a uniform or not. And I kept telling people right away, you know, these cops that are trying to intimidate me, they think they're soldiers.
Right, right.
You know, and so they treat you that way. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I got more up and, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they were doing that to me. And I was like, that's not right.
No, it isn't right.
You know, I'm a little woman. I'm barely 5'3". I weigh 100 pounds, and you're going to try and intimidate me physically? How dare you?
Yeah, yeah.
In an American system, because I was going to City Hall, I was going to, you know, their offices, and I was very polite, you know, and the secretaries and the receptionists were great. That's where I got all my documents from.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
there,
I do.
You know? Uh-huh.
Well, We've only got a couple more minutes. Is this Dawson v. Seattle in King City? I imagine somebody could search that out, I would think so, online and be able to read that toll.
Yeah, I had all my stuff about it online, but now the actual, the appellate court decision, I know that's online. It's, yeah, Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N,
okay,
versus the City of Seattle.
Okay.
And the County of King, I think, is how they write it. I can't remember exactly.
Well, either way you put it in, it should be.
Yeah,
able
and
to
it was filed
it
in the state court in 2002, and then it was bumped up to federal.
Okay.
And the decision came down in 2005, and it lost because they did not establish the training, that the police were trained in a way that was unconstitutional. And the problem there is I had all the documents to prove the training, and the attorneys took it out.
The attorneys representing you took it out?
Well, they weren't representing me. I brought them the clients.
Okay.
Nobody knew what to call me.
Okay.
And why I cared so much. I was asked that 100 times, you know.
Yeah.
What does
okay.
this have to do with you? And I
so
said,
the attorneys who were representing the people you brought to them took the information you gave them, and they didn't put it in the complaint.
Right. They took it all out.
Yeah,
I think
so they didn't.
And I don't think in the beginning that Boyle planned on doing it that way, but somewhere along the line, that's the way it happened. And I've always wanted to talk to her about that.
Interesting.
Or she
interesting.
Might not want
listen,
to talk to me.
Nikki, I've only got another minute, so
the summary?
What's that?
No, everybody always asks me to sum up my whole
life. Oh, no, I wasn't actually going to say that. I was going to say that maybe you can come on and we can talk more in depth about this case that you were involved in because we really just skimmed it. But I really just wanted to talk about communitarianism tonight because you mentioned that to me so many times that nobody talks about it, and I think really to sum it up, it's just they need to fight against sustainable development and not get wrapped up in all of the other stuff that they get wrapped up in. That's so easy
right,
to get wrapped up in.
That sustainable development is based in the philosophy of communitarianism.
I gotcha. Listen, I got to thank you for coming on. NikkiRapana.blogspot.com, because I only got another minute, Nikki, so I got to.
Okay.
We're at the top of the hour. Hang on, though, when we go off the air, Nikki, I want to talk to you. Listen, everybody, you know I love to go to Oz. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is a wonderful place to be. Please, hang in there. Better days are coming. There are more of us than there are of them. And we have people like Nikki Rapana in the world who are on our side. So thank God for that. Take care, everybody. I'll be back on Friday at 5.
Where there isn't any trouble. Do you suppose there is such a place, Toto? There must be. It's not a place you can get to by a boat or a train. It's far, far away. Behind the moon, beyond the rain.
You're listening to 1360 WNJC Washington Township, Philadelphia, and around the world at WNJCAM.com, a service of Forsyth Broadcasting. For the past hour, you've been listening to The Unsolicited Opinion with Maggie. Find out more information at TheUnsolicitedOpinion.com. Stand by for the Bottom Up Radio Show with Rob Call.